open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode of the Bison Report Radio from the brand new Bison Report Studios in lovely Horace, North Dakota. And joining me now is, I don't know, former, current Bison Report staffer. What I don't know if you still work for us or not.
Either or. I mean, some days I just show up. I certainly didn't get paid. So, I mean, I guess former intern. I don't know
yeah,
about that.
There you go. Which, of course, would make me an intern at Bison 1660 every Friday at 5 o'clock.
Correct.
If you haven't figured out, this is the man, the myth, the legend, Keith Brake of the Breakdown of Bison 1660 fame.
No one's ever called me a legend before. That's the ultimate compliment right there.
What a day. What a couple of weeks, honestly.
Yeah, for all of us.
Wanted to bring Keith on and kind of just discuss the state of FCS, the state of Bison football. And this was actually on the books before the Josh Hayes decision that was, you know, broken by Jeff Kolpak of the Forum this morning. And really, I think, given some excellent context by Matt Entz at his press conference. You know, I think there are a lot of folks, like I got a couple of messages from former players, et cetera. Hey, it's FBS time. You know, we need to stop losing our best players just because we're not FBS. And I get that. At the same time, there's not a magic FBS fairy that's just going to show up and put you in the Mountain West. That it doesn't work like that either. But to hear the real reasons, and we'll get into those in a little bit. I mean, I think it actually put some decent context onto this decision and why this is happening.
I definitely do. And, you know, when Matt Entz mentioned Josh's daughter, Lilani, I talked to Josh last week for an interview that never made it to air because the game was called off. But he talked about her and the way that fatherhood changes your perspective on things. And when Matt Entz said Josh has to reintroduce himself as dad to his own daughter every time he goes home, I was like, that's reason enough. Right. Yep. There. That is reason enough for him to say, I want to make this move. I want to get a little bit closer to home. And I completely understand it. I mean, the timing of it is really inopportune for a lot of people, I think, on the program side. But Josh has got to do this when Josh feels like it's right for him. And the time for him is right now. And certainly, you know, he is going to have some opportunities, I think, to get some looks at a higher level, whether that higher level is, you know, Conference USA or it's, say, the SEC or the ACC, maybe is still up for discussion. But I certainly think that when Josh enters the portal, when he has permission to contact, which he does, I believe now, you know, he will have some suitors because he's put together a really phenomenal career here at North Dakota State.
Yeah, if I'm Gus Malzahn, you know, I'm losing Tay Gowan and Aaron Robinson to the NFL. Both, for me, on the draft side, Tay and Aaron are top 75 overall players, both top 10 corners. Aaron's a nickel. Tay plays outside. I'm making a call immediately. If I'm Gus Malzahn at UCF, if I'm at USF, I'm making a call.
Yeah.
I don't know about Florida and Florida State. That I haven't honestly done a ton of study on where they are recruiting wise, depth chart wise, et cetera. But if I'm one of those three letter schools down in Florida, I am definitely making the call. And I'm just going to play devil's advocate for just a short bit here and just kind of ask why now. I mean, here are the facts. The simple fact is he could have done everything the exact same way and finished out the NDSU season. Now, if it was just time to go home and be a dad, it was time to go home and be a dad. I understand that as a father of an infant daughter, absolutely, 100%. But the opportunity to transfer, the opportunity to go high major, the opportunity just kind of in general was going to be the exact same. This spring season was not going to count against his eligibility. He's a team captain. We'll probably never hear directly from Josh. Why now? I would assume it had a lot to do with the frustrations of having these two consecutive games canceled. And again, just some time to think. And time to think sometimes is dangerous, and that's, you know, kind of where we're at now. But have to respect the decision 100%, understand why he did it 100%. But like I said, you know, you could have, in theory, had the exact same opportunity to play at the FBS or Power 5 level finishing out this spring season. Of course, there's always the other side of it. You twist one knee, and that right. opportunity goes completely out the window.
Right. You have one catastrophic injury, and suddenly, you know, USF or UCF or whoever is moving on to
right.
other options, because there are a lot of names and a lot of high-caliber talent all over the football field in the transfer portal right now that those teams are actively pursuing and recruiting, and it's a whole second recruiting cycle. And, you know, the reasons for Josh timing this the way he timed it are his own. Frankly, it's none of my business.
Nope.
And I honestly am not bothered one way or the other by it. It does kind of leave NDSU in a precarious spot, but the Bison have won national championships with less starting experience at corner. They won a national championship with two starting cornerbacks with a combined 0 games of starting experience yeah. in 2017. So the Bison, I think,
one of them
okay.
was Hayes.
One of them was Josh Hayes, making his first collegiate start. The other was Marquise Bridges. And, you know, they had two really good guys in Wimbush and Allison, injured the game before, 3 weeks before. And those two young men stepped up and they played great. And I have every confidence that North Dakota State still has the talent, maybe not necessarily the experience that makes you feel comfortable with that talent, but they have the talent at corner to do it again.
Yeah, one of them's not eligible, unfortunately, but, you know, on our end, on the 24/7 sports side, like, we're very excited about the talent at corner. We're just not super excited about the experience level. In speaking with Christian Dudzik, who's helped train Marquise Siegel at First Pick Performance, Marquise is a really exciting, really fast young man, someone that we're excited about. And shoot, Courtney Banks was a 3-star. I think you go back and look at it, he was probably the most highly touted kid just from a rating perspective from last year's class. He was just waiting for that big offer that never came and ended up at North Dakota State. Now he's got a chance to prove himself and shoot, maybe end up like Josh Hayes, but that's, you know, obviously far, far down the line.
Right.
That young man has tremendous amount of talent, and Nasir Howell, he just looks like one of those kids that maybe shouldn't be at North Dakota State. His length, his athletic ability, his fluidity in spring practices that I was able to see, I'm really excited for that kid's future. Unfortunately, there is no waiver coming. That kid is a December high school graduate who early enrolled. He cannot, absolutely cannot play no matter what this season. He can continue to practice with the team, but he just simply can't play. So they have, and that's not to say anything of Anthony Coleman or Gennaro Wathem-Okama, and I believe Okama is actually the one that now got bumped onto the two deep after Hayes' exit. So it'll be very interesting to see, you know, kind of who gets playing time. And the other thing is, I know heading into this season, Michael Tutsi was probably the starter at nickel if all things were going to go the way they wanted them to. So if you have a situation where Dawson Weber is able to return, then I think your sub look is a 3-safety look with Weber and now the newly experienced Dom Jones, and then Tut maybe down in the box, and you can stay with Price and Talbert, two guys that have seen a ton of snaps.
And how valuable has the experience been for Dom Jones in letting
oh, yeah.
you do that schematically? Obviously, he'd be sandwiched between, you know, two really talented and veteran safeties in Weber and Tutsi, but we've seen more than enough for me to invest confidence in Dom Jones and what his career at North Dakota State is going to look like over the next several years and even over the next several weeks. I think this young man has a really bright future, and it's coming at him fast. And you see his ability to get up in the air and make plays on the ball, and that's something that every team craves on the back end of a defense. And his length obviously is really valuable. His explosiveness, his ability to change direction, but it's really the verticality that he can bring to that free safety spot that really sets him apart for me. And seeing him now in a position where he knows how to use his skill set, he knows what his athleticism can do and what it can't do at this level, I think the sky is the limit for that young man. And if Dawson Weber, knock on wood, can can get back into the lineup for NDSU, and still no guarantee that's going to happen. But if it does, David Braun is going to be like a kid in the candy store with some of the coverages he can throw at offenses.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the things I really liked from their initial game plan week one of the spring season was the amount of just base that they played, which is their cover two. And if there is a coverage out there that protects corners, it's definitely cover two.
Absolutely.
And so you're going to probably see a lot of that split high safety stuff moving forward. I think that they will be able to protect, if they feel the need to, they'll be able to protect Talbert and Price. On the other hand, it is going to remove a lot of their single high stuff from the play sheet, I think. And certainly, you know, there are no longer any, shut down anything, I don't think. I mean, you're not going to follow a top receiver from another team with either Talbert or Price. You're just going to play whatever it is that you were going to play. I don't know if one's going to be left and one's going to be right. One's going to be boundary, one's going to be field. But I don't think either of those two players are going to just follow the opposing, like an Isaiah Weston or anything like that. I just don't see that, as what they're going to do. But that's kind of, I think, enough on the Hayes situation. If you guys haven't, I think Matt's answer was really professional.
It was outstanding. Yeah, I was blown away.
And honestly, that's something, too, like just from a recruiting perspective and something to show incoming kids, to just listen to a head football coach talk about a human being like that and not just think of him as a football asset, but really get into why personally there is no animosity behind this decision. And of course, it would have been a terrible look for Matt to come up and say this was a selfish decision, this was stupid, I can't believe he did that, blah, blah, blah. But actually getting into the reasoning and getting into why and really explaining on the kids' behalf. Josh Hayes didn't have to come up and answer 25 people why he did this. Matt Ants had to do that for him. And I was just really impressed with Coach and how he really, I think, humanized this decision and explained it out. Like, look, these are the big three reasons why he did it. And frankly, I agree.
Yeah, I think if you don't do that, you invite speculation of, oh, he got contacted by such and such school and, you know, they did this under the table thing and it was all very cloak and dagger and now Josh is leaving. I would say that quite truthfully, Matt Entz probably won some people over from just the perspective of, oh, are you going to help me grow as a person when I'm coming here? Are you going to look after my son if I put him in your charge? And it's important that people see empathy from a football coach for a player situation, especially one as extraordinary as Josh is. If you don't have that now, players and their families are smart enough, they are savvy enough, they are perceptive enough to know that that's a red flag if you don't have that. And I just think it speaks to the strength of the culture of this program that they're not going to throw a kid under the bus for deciding to leave, even though the timing of it might leave them in a little bit of a tight spot. It speaks to the culture of this program that they express a lot of confidence in Destin Talbert, who had a great game against UND and the last time we saw him, and is going to have an opportunity now to really kind of be the guy because he's the most experienced player in that room. It speaks to their confidence in Jaden Price. It speaks to their confidence in their young guys. It speaks to the strength of this program that there is no animosity when someone does this, and that, you know, it's actually laying out piece by piece the reasons that this was done. And when you're transparent about all of that and you're honest about it and you talk about the human element of what goes into players' decisions to leave a program, that's good for college football. I think it's good for the way we perceive and talk about college football, and also it's very good for the environment that young people come into, that it's not just going to be about, you know, getting out there, nose to the grindstone, coach is going to be in your ear barking at you because you're not doing what they say. There's a much more comprehensive experience that you get from a college football program that displays that sort of empathy. And Matt Entz is a coach, and David Braun is a coach, and Tyler Roll and Noah Pauley and so many others are the kind of people who understand that football is more than football, right? It's about what it teaches you for life. It's about what it teaches you in terms of critical thinking, in terms of time management, in terms of commitment, and you know, there's so many things that you learn from football that aren't just how to follow basic instructions from a football coach. And when you have coaches who understand that, you have coaches who are invested in the human and not just the football asset of a college football player. And that's, I think that's part of what sets North Dakota State apart in FCS football and college football in general. And it's going to pay significant dividends for not just Matt Entz and not just for the players and not just for the staff, but for the overall atmosphere around the program over a period of the next several years, however long Matt ends up being here.
Well, right, and that's, you know, we said we were going to, and that was kind of the original idea behind this podcast, was just talking about the state of the FCS, and I think that's incredibly important, is a coach that has kind of the self-awareness to understand that there is going to be interest in his players. He might not like it. He might feel like he's a farm system. He might feel like the heart and soul and the blood, sweat, and tears that he poured into Jabril Cox so LSU could have a really good player for 1 year is a raw deal. And I can empathize with all that, but it's also with name, image, and likeness and the one-time transfer rule coming down, it's a reality of the situation. So what you can't do as the head coach of North Dakota State is act bitter. Mm-hmm. And you can't be that way, and you have to – in my opinion, you're going to get tons of not only kids, but also their families. They're going to see something like that on our Twitter feed and see, wow, we didn't get, you know, for whatever reason, because every kid thinks they should play at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Every kid. And so, you know, when that offer doesn't come, and when it is, and of course, there are kids that grow up in small town North Dakota and even in Fargo that, yeah, maybe honestly their be-all, end-all is to play at North Dakota State. And that's fine, and that's great. But the Minnesota kids, the Iowa kids, the Wisconsin kids that this group recruits, they all think they should go to Minnesota, Iowa State, and Wisconsin. I mean, that's their ultimate goal. And so when you do get a kid that's a borderline, as Matt called it in his press conference today, a borderline Power 5 kid, then, yeah, you're going to have kids that want to get back there and are using this program. Now, I think you probably want to target kids that aren't using this program and actually want to be here and want to compete for championships. But there are going to be kids that use this program as a platform to prove that, F you, I was good enough. You screwed up, not me. But at the same time, after, you know, maybe a true freshman season where they do play and then maybe a sophomore year where they start, there might be some high major interest. And with a one-time transfer rule, it's going to be really hard to combat that. And the worst thing I think that Entz and his staff could do, like I said, is act bitter when stuff like this happens. I think he could not have handled it better. I don't think he could have been more professional. And frankly, I don't think he could have helped himself in the recruiting side of things any more than he did today at that press conference.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it is kind of a cynical way to look at it when you say, oh, you know, he won a recruiting battle because he treated a football player like a human being. But
hey,
I mean, you know what? It is kind of the world you live in college football when something like that happens. And I look at the state of the transfer portal and the way players are moving around and are going to move around. And on April 15th, if you get that one-time transfer rule approved, I think you will see chaos for 2 years. And then after that, things will start to settle down a little bit more. But Matt Entz also, I thought, gave a really good answer on transfers and how his program is handling it. You know, you're kind of at the point where if you're a really good perennial national championship caliber team like North Dakota State, you got to be prepared to lose one or two guys to the transfer portal every year. And, you know, you could sit there and be, you know, the Pat Fitzgerald archetype and say, this is the way we're doing it. We've always done it this way. We're going to keep doing it this way. And we want people who want to do it this way. And you will watch as the game passes you by. And Matt Entz is too smart and too savvy, and his staff is too savvy to let that happen. They absolutely understand the ramifications of this. They are absolutely prepared to adapt to it. We've already, to some degree, seen them adapt to it with the Brayden Thomas addition. I mean, he's only going to be here for 1 year, and he's absolutely made an impact on the rotation on the defensive line. He's not the only Mankato transfer that they've brought into this program, and I absolutely believe they are ready to go after players in the transfer portal to shore up short-term holes, if that's what it takes. And you kind of have to treat it that way. You know, we talk in the NFL about, you know, you use the draft to add talent and free agency to plug holes is the old-fashioned philosophy, or maybe it's the newfangled philosophy. I don't know. But you kind of use high school recruiting to just add as much bulk talent to your program as you possibly can. And then if you have a hole, especially a hole that's kind of maybe not necessarily as challenging to step into, like quarterback is a tough one to step into because you got to learn a whole new offense. But if you're looking for just a good athletic corner in a cover two system, you can go to the transfer portal and get a guy who can play for 1 year, 2 years. You can find a lot of valuable players that can help you win by going that route. And I don't think North Dakota State wants to do that a ton necessarily, not necessarily the way that some programs feed on the transfer portal, like some schools in the Southland and some schools in the OVC do. They tend to get a lot of SEC and Big 12 dropdowns, but I don't think North Dakota State wants to do that. I don't think you'll see North Dakota State do that, but I do think they have the awareness of this tool at their disposal. This tool obviously helps players get to places where they are happy, but it can also help coaches build really high level, high talented rosters, even though those players might not be there for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and I think you just saw North Dakota State do it. I don't think it's even been technically announced. Maybe the kid is, I don't know, maybe the kid's not signed his letter or whatever, but Tamarick Williams, running back SMU. I mean, that's a very obvious hole. Now, it seems to be filled by Hunter Lupke, but it was an obvious hole of that big feature tailback, you know. And so as much as I love Kobe Johnson and Jalen Bussey as players, you've seen with the injury to Kobe, like they're it's insane to expect either one of those kids to carry it 22 to 23, 26 times in a game. Manufacture 10 or 12 touches for those types of players. That's awesome. They're going to help you win football games. But to ask Kobe at 5'9", 180 to carry the offense is bonkers sauce. So they went and got a huge back in Tamarick Williams. Again, they might have already solved that issue with Hunter Lupke, but Lupke is also more fun as kind of a Swiss Army knife too. So I think you absolutely have seen, you know, North Dakota State, as you mentioned, obviously the Buteau thing, the Brayden Thomas thing.
Yep.
They've done what they, you know, can. I would love personally to see them in the corner market heading into the fall. I said, a lot of faith in the talent level, but you know, maybe a grad transfer with 2 years to play because of COVID would be a hell of an idea. You know, somebody that maybe played in the spring or their school opted out, whatever. They have a degree, want to maybe come and do some graduate work at North Dakota State and have 2 years to play. Sounds great. Somebody, you know, with some ability there. But other than that, I mean, this has always been the same thing as Coach Richmond's is. They, both programs are developmental programs based on retention. And they are going to continue to develop these corners. Cody Morgan does a great job. And I think that's just going to have to be kind of their plan moving forward. They're not going to turn into transfer U.
No, they're not. And I do think that you pick your spots with that. And you typically want to add guys that maybe don't necessarily have to relearn everything they know about offense when they step in. You know, it's more of a, and that's not to say that, you know, running back and cornerback are plug and play positions that you can go play anywhere in any scheme, but it's maybe a little bit easier to make that transition at certain positions than it is at others. And I think running back is one of those where if you can go get a really good explosive athlete, well, a good explosive athlete in one backfield is as good as he is in any other backfield.
Right.
So, you know, I think somebody like that is extremely valuable and somebody that is worth pursuing. And North Dakota State has a history with transfer running backs. They were very successful with King Frazier.
Absolutely.
So I definitely believe that you have opportunities to go get impactful players in the transfer portal, and you would frankly be foolish not to do it. But you know, if you are a believer in the backbone of your program being high school players, being developmental players, being guys that you get in here who are 6'6 and maybe like a 195 and you turn them into 300-pound hosses, you know, which North Dakota State can do and has a reputation for doing, you know, then you continue to do that until you are given a very, very strong reason not to.
Absolutely. All right. State of the FCS. Let's move to the, I don't know, what do you want to call it, 800-pound gorilla, elephant, like whatever it is, it's in the room. COVID-19. I mean, I have consistently felt like this season is circling the drain, and then consistently had that pushed back on. That, you know, the national guys like Sam Herder, et cetera, are just saying, nope, everything is everything. The NCAA is still hitting their thresholds for how many teams are still in it. There's still going to be a championship, whether you think your program's going to be involved or not. Where are you at with this whole thing, with two consecutive cancellations for North Dakota State, a transfer out, probably at least somewhat due to the cancellations? Just where are you at?
I was someone who was adamant about it's a bad idea to play in the fall. Because FCS institutions, especially at the time with the scarcity of testing materials, I didn't think they were going to be able to create a safe environment. And when the spring started, there were some teams that were going to opt out because they said, this is a weird one-off situation. We didn't play in the fall. We think that it's too much football to play in a calendar year, and we're just going to be back in the fall. Indiana State did that. Montana State did that. They also didn't have indoor practice facilities, which probably doesn't help.
Right. Yep.
When you're trying to play in a foot of snow or practice in a foot of snow to get ready for football games. So there were some other elements to that, but some teams, you know, in the Ivy League, they looked at it immediately in the fall and said, we're not playing in the spring either. Some teams looked at it and said, it's just too much of a physical toll. We're not going to do this. And they did that in January and February. I think we are very much still on course to complete a season. And we're gonna have a championship because, look, I know a lot of people just pay close attention to the Valley. But what's happening to North Dakota State the last 2 weeks has been happening all throughout this FCS season. It's been happening from the very first week. We've had games postponed. We've had teams hit with outbreaks. James Madison has lost games at multiple times due to issues in their program and then two issues in opposing programs. After that, they're still trying to get some games together. As of us having this conversation, they haven't done anything. There has been some lobbying for them to play Villanova, which would be must-see TV and would be a whole lot better for their playoff resume and their seeding resume than the William and Mary game that I believe they were supposed to play this week anyway. So I look at all of this and I say, you got to kind of roll with it the way that FBS did in the fall. And I think about, when you think about games getting canceled and teams opting out, you knew that was going to happen. The only team that's opted out during the season that surprised me was Albany. Albany had two losses, and apparently injuries were starting to pile up for them, but I was a little bit surprised to see them say, no thanks, we're done, because they've got a really talented team. They're kind of young. I mean, Jeff Undercuffler is a rising star at quarterback, but I was a little bit surprised by that one. Wofford opted out today. Wasn't shocked by that because their playoff prospects were shot. Illinois State was down 30 players from full complement. They were starting walk-ons on the defensive line. I talked to Brock Spack, and I could tell in his voice he did not want to continue doing this. So it was pretty obvious that he didn't want his team to play. It was obvious that they were going to, at some point, say, we're not doing this anymore. Cal Poly was already shorthanded. They didn't even get on the field until March to practice. I was surprised they started the season from the outset, frankly. Chattanooga was not all in. They were the only SoCon team at the beginning of the year that wasn't fully committed to even starting the season. I was not surprised to see them, A, play a bunch of backups against Mercer, start all backups. They started all twos and threes, and then the next day they said, we're done. I don't know if they got pushback on that or what. But none of what has happened to this point has really surprised me. All of it is frustrating, obviously, and it's very frustrating to watch. But, you know, these things have been happening all over the country. And frankly, there are still conferences that have found a way to get through. You know, the Big Sky is going to get all but three games in. The last three games that Cal Poly decided they didn't want to play. The OVC has not canceled a game because of COVID-19 protocols. The Southland hasn't canceled a game yet. So we're still going to have a championship. We're going to have a postseason. You know, whether that postseason includes schools from the region, I guess, you know, people can speculate on that. But I think everybody in the Valley who is in it right now is committed to seeing this thing through to the end.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I think that's just a kind of a take a deep breath type of situation, right? I mean,
a little bit, yeah.
That's what, you know, after every little thing that has happened in NDSU COVID related, some media member or some fan or somebody has gone on social and been like, all right, shut it down, shut mm-hmm. it down, shut it down. And it's hard not to feel that, like, as momentum. It's hard not to feel, and just because, you know, one columnist says it or one guy says this or one guy says that, it doesn't actually affect anything. It's
right.
just out there kind of in the zeitgeist, and it's tough. It's hard to, you know, look at this season and feel like it's any kind of success this spring season. I mean, regardless of the fact that, you know, North Dakota State has a winning record and right now is seeded number two, as they have been for a number of their national championships. I think a lot of fans will look, you know, back fondly on laying waste to a UND program that
absolutely
thought they were pretty hot stuff. But ultimately, you know, not getting to see Trey Lance in the 2020 season, losing Dylan Radins, already having lost Jabril Cox, now you lose Josh Hayes. Carson Schoening decides to go get a real job. I mean, there's just a lot of things where you look at this season and you're like, damn, that, you know, and I even think of, like, when I do draft prep, I think I didn't get to see Trey Lance against Javon Holland, D'Amador Lenore, and Thomas Graham. I didn't get a chance to see that. I didn't get a chance to see Dylan Radins block Kayvon Thibodeau.
Yep.
All this sucks. And even, it, like, was brought up in Matt's press conference today, even the UNI thing. Like, Ellerson Smith and Spencer Brown are legit prospects. They're not legit like Dylan. I mean, Dylan and Jabril will go before either UNI guy goes. Obviously, Trey's going before everybody. Mm-hmm. But just the raw amount of NFL talent that would have been on the field at that NDSU versus UNI game would have been amazing.
It would have been unbelievable. But, you know, it's kind of the hand we've been dealt.
I know. These are the times we live in.
It's just weird, man. It's weird. And we're going to get back to something resembling normal in the fall. I will say I'm a little bit disappointed because I was an advocate for playing in the spring. But I also said that if you're going to do that, you have to accept that whatever it is, 16, 17 games is a lot for guys to play in calendar year. Even though North Dakota State does that every now and then, now North Dakota State's being asked to play, 26 games in a calendar year, or something like that, if they want to win two national championships. So I advocated for acknowledging that we want to play in the spring, and that's going to affect our players in terms of wear and tear and maintenance, and we need to give them as much extra recovery time as we can. And whether you push back the start of the fall season or you just you know, you just start you do whatever, you do something to maybe you wipe out competition dates, you push back the start of competition, you do something to ensure that those guys have an extra, even 2 or 3 weeks of recovery time can be pivotal. And nobody got on the same page and did that at the conference level.
Right. And the problem with that, Keith, is, and I was 100% in lockstep with you. I said, push the season back 4 weeks, start at the end of September instead of the end of whatever, start at the end of September instead of the end of August, fix the schedule so the indoor places have the games late. But as Coach brought up a while ago, there are a number of FCS teams with previously agreed upon dates with FBS opponents that's going to pay their athletic departments tons and tons of money.
Yep.
And they're not going to bail on that. So it's not going to make sense for, and I don't know that this, I would probably guess this is not on the schedule, but that doesn't make any sense for Eastern Washington to go play Oregon and then shut it down for 4 weeks because they need the rest. And then, you know, just play later and later into the season. I think it's going to be unfortunate, especially for offensive and defensive linemen. This is going to suck. Biting this, playing a national championship game on May 16th and then being expected to be ready to go on September 3rd is going to suck. But it's only a one-time thing. And I think pushing back the FCS season could have had effect on multiple seasons down the line. Obviously, it has an effect on spring football. everyone has had to take their medicine during this pandemic, and now they're just going to have to take it one more time. And the FCS kids really get the short end of the straw here. But, you know, I know D2 kids that just didn't get to play, and mm-hmm. D3 kids that just didn't get to play. And a lot of them, even more so than the FCS and FBS kids, you know, there aren't a lot of people going to Concordia, taking an extra lap around Concordia to play one more year of football.
Right.
That ain't how it works. Okay? I mean, the same thing goes for Minnesota State University Moorhead or Mankato or Northern State or wherever, you know, especially these expensive private Division III universities. Kids aren't going to take a victory lap to play a fifth year of football. Like, it's just not going to work that way. So, you know, like I said, everybody's got to kind of take their medicine.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like I said, it's unfortunate, but in the end, you gotta do the opposite of Dabo Swinney in the Florida State game. You've got to just roll with it. You know, don't throw anybody under the bus, because you never know when that's going to come back around on you. You know, a lot of people wanted Illinois State's games when they opted out to be forfeits. And I just look at that and I say, okay, well, the instant your program opts out, you're going to be asked to forfeit too, and then you're going right. to pitch a fit. Yep. So I've just... You gotta. Ultimately, we would love to do things differently. If we all had say, and we could all get everybody who needs to make these decisions to sit down in a room and get on the same page and reach a consensus, then I think things would probably look a little bit different. But it's just the way it is that, you know, we kind of have to roll with the hand we're dealt. And you know, if you can't get everybody on the same page about something, then you got to do what's best for you. You got to look after your conference. You got to look after your program. And that's why teams are opting out right now. That's why teams elected not to play this spring. And that's why, you know, the teams that are playing this spring and are seeing this through are going to have to prepare themselves for probably a lot of extra rotation of their offensive and defensive lines in the fall.
Keith Brake, everybody. Keith, thank you so much for coming on.
Great to be here, Ross. Horace is beautiful this time of year.
Thanks. All right, folks. We will be back later on in the week, barring any cancellation of this UNI game, with Trevor Gebhardt to break down the matchup in Cedar Falls with the Panthers.